Welcome. Everyone but me. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's Fukushima irradiated and fluoridated. It's just fabulous. Everybody's enjoying a resurgence in the economy since they earned a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest, speaking of incandescent light bulbs, inferior technology, and mercury-laced light bulbs aren't really any better. I've got two guests hopefully on the line. My first is Mark Dancy. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm here in sunny Utah at the moment, covered in snow. But normally I reside not far from you, those mad Aussies who keep beating you at cricket.
My brother once told a joke to me. Man walks into a bar with a dog underneath his arm, and he orders a shot of whiskey for himself and a shot of whiskey for the dog. And they both drink it, and the dog throws the shot of whiskey into the fire, and just, and the bartender's pretty perplexed with this, and he goes, "What's with the dog, mate?" And the man says, "Oh, he does that every time the New Zealanders lose the cricket." And he says, and the bartender goes, "Oh, yeah? What does he do if they win?" And he goes, "I don't know. I've only had him 10 years."
And I believe, yeah, mate. Anyway, better introduce Sterling.
Yes,
he's in South America, I think, or somewhere.
Yeah, South America, where all the cocaine is. I'm sure he's very happy with that. Yeah, Sterling Allen is from PESWiki.com, PESWiki.com, the free energy Wikipedia. He's been a contributor to Guerrilla Media, and we've been reposting his articles for some time. And frankly, if you want to find a single source online where you want to learn practically anything you want about any type of real free energy device, this really is the place to go. Sterling, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be on your show.
Okay, so guys, what are we going to be talking about today? Mark, we haven't had you on the show before.
Well, I'm sort of the skeptic that a lot of the stuff that Sterling covers, I travel around the world and try and figure out what really is real and what isn't real. So I test the claims, and I work for a company where we're investigating and creating new energy devices ourselves, but a lot of my time is actually traveling saying, hey, if your car really runs on water or you've got a magnetic motor, whether they really actually have got that. Oh, just hang on, that's my phone. Keep going, I'll kill the phone. I forgot about that.
Oh, well, in fact, this is the most important part of the free energy community is debunking those people who are frauds. And in fact, I believe I had, what's his name from the Thrive Movement? I had Foster Gamble on the show once, and he was talking about this amazing free energy device that this guy had that runs his house, and it's about the size of a 9-volt battery and stuff like that. Doesn't need to be recharged. And then I talked to him later on, and he'd actually sent a team down there to ascertain whether or not this guy was full of BS. It turns out he was. It was a lie. So these kind of investigative skills are, as I said, so important to the movement in order to maintain its credibility, because anybody can say, I've got this device and it does that, that, and the other, but not everybody can prove it, and you can't start spreading it around to people before it's proven. Otherwise, you lose your credibility, and then people don't believe in free energy of any kind.
That's the problem, and you're 100% correct there. It's not always dishonest people. Quite often when we come across these devices or claims, it's not that they're dishonest people. They just may not be able to measure something properly. They're using the wrong sort of instruments, or there's something that's just confusing them. So there's some who just don't know how to measure stuff. There's some who are delusional. There are some dishonest, but there are some genuine people who are doing some good research. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but really to keep the you know, to get the credibility you need to get these things put in production, or the investment, or the media, or even the government behind you, you do have to test these claims, and you have to do it to standards that are acceptable, I guess, by the rest of society. But there are some great, great things happening. I was down in Hollywood yesterday testing a technology, and it's just a very clever application of solar energy for the movie industry, and it was just brilliant. I mean, and there's a lot of traditional technologies that can be applied in different ways. And your country's a great example. Your country's got a lot of renewable energies.
Well, it does, but unfortunately they seem to be largely under government control. And of course, the truth about these renewable energies is very sparse because, like for instance, Wellington, our capital city, has one big windmill on it, okay? And I was talking with this environmentalist guy, and he said to me that that one windmill powers the whole city. And I was like, dude, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Okay, that one windmill tops powers maybe 10, 20,000 homes or something like that, and there's 100,000 plus in the city, not to mention all the office buildings or anything like that. Yeah. And it's not even that big a one. They require these huge giant wind farms with hundreds of windmills in places, and still it only accounts for like a couple of percent of the world's energy production grid. What the hell are you talking about? You know,
what I'd like to do is kind of set a context of where we could go with this conversation.
Sure.
I'm going to be posting a page in the next few days at pezwiki.com where I list, in the almost 11 years that I've been tracking these technologies, going out and seeing a few, and others reporting on what they find, including Mark. And he is a very excellent researcher in that regard. He's very thorough, and he wants to get to the truth of does this thing work or not. So we pay attention to what these people say. And as I have tracked this, I've come up with a listing of 24 conventional and what I call free energy technologies, meaning that they harness what Nikola Tesla calls a wheel work of nature, the energy provided freely from nature. Wind is free, solar is free, geothermal is free. 24 ocean currents, waste to energy, biomass. So it got 24 different genres, entire genres of clean energy technology. And typically, these are more expensive than what you pay for from the grid. I shouldn't say typically. As a rule, the only time you get cheaper is if somebody's thrown something away and you found it in the garbage, okay? That's the only time you're going to get cheap energy of the conventional free energy sort. On the unconventional side, the exotic free energy technologies, there are also 24 genres that I have tracked that where there are claims to working technologies. Now, whether or not every one of these genres actually pans out is yet to be seen.
Well, yes, Sterling, no, you're wrong there. Most of them been debunked. Seriously, some are worthwhile pursuing. But you show me one magnetic motor that's running, that you've claimed's running, one PAP engine, one free-running hydrogen engine self-running, one water-powered car. We've both been down the track. You've put a lot of work into this. A lot of other people put a lot of work in validating it. I remember the New Zealand water-powered motorbike. That one comes to mind immediately. But it's great to say that there's 24 genres and it's yet to be seen. Well, in a lot of cases, it has been seen. The jury's not out. It's finished. It's debunked. It doesn't work. And you really have to be honest about these things. Otherwise,
that's where we fundamentally disagree. Mark comes on the scene, and he judges things guilty until proven innocent.
Judges, I come on the scene with instruments,
and I judge things innocent until proven guilty, which, in my opinion, is the American way. And I consider Mark Danzy to be almost a devil in this industry because of his attitude is so negative. He almost derails things just by his attitude of going in, and the inventors don't want to talk to him, so he doesn't get a good test.
Excuse me. I see more inventors than you, mate. I did 46 flights last last year, 26 internationals evaluating the technologies yesterday.
You've heard of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that the very act of observation changes things, and your attitude changes it to negative, and I would hope that my attitude changes things for the positive. I help things get accomplished where you think help things not get accomplished.
What have you accomplished, Sterling?
What have you just wait and see.
You
say that magnet motors have been debunked.
Yeah,
but this week, we are talking about a group that is going to a university in Europe to have a magnet motor tested for 30 days consecutive without stopping, two magnet motors, and you say it's bunk because you're so sure it's bunk. But this is going to be going to a university, and you're not willing to give them a week to prove this out. You have a negative, sucky attitude.
Okay, guys, can I just moderate this for a moment here? Okay, so on radio, when two people are talking, you can't hear anyone. Okay, so what I want to do is have one person talk, finish their point, and then the other person respond to that point. So what Sterling has just said is that you've said that you found a magnetic motor that works, and Mark fundamentally disagrees on that. Mark, what's your point that you'd like to add in?
Well, in the past, every single magnetic motor that's been claimed to work has either tested not to work, or it's a con man, or it's a scam, or whatever. This one's been running around for a few years. Some scientists, different groups have been around to try and test it. Nobody can confirm it. Then they say, oh, we're going to university. But what normally happens, oh, there'll be a delay. This one's already been delayed. And until they physically can do something, what's the use of promoting this stuff? I mean, Sterling, name me one magnetic motor of all the ones you've seen and all the ones I've tested that's ever worked. Now, are there some real technology out there worthwhile investigating further? Yes, there are. But in this case, no. I mean, how many times have we down the path of PAP engines, with self-running hydrogen generators, with whatever it is, and you claim it's real, it's real, it's real, and then it turns out it's not? Why not report the story, say what's claimed, which you do, and you do that very well, but then rather than proclaiming it's real and building up people's hopes all the time, wait until the fat lady sings, until the test data's in.
Sterling, your response?
Okay, is it my turn?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, he's referring to technology over in Europe, and I'll try and keep this as concise as possible. First of all, I got my start in free energy back in 2002, May, with a magnet motor, a claim to a magnet motor, which ended up not being bunk, but being a scam where the guy stole an idea from a patent that was patented in Brazil by a guy who presented a working magnet motor to the Brazilian patent office in order to get the patent. He took the design, didn't give credit to the inventor, and was taking people's money for a device that he never delivered, and ended up, he's now in jail. Mike Brady, of the Parandev fame, and I own the domain name Parandev.com because we were going to go into business with this guy, helping him expand this thing internationally. In 2002, I grabbed that domain name with his permission, and have now that forwards to our PezWiki coverage, where we say this guy is in jail for defrauding people, but it's based on a Brazilian patent. We give you a link to the patent. And we tell you, don't try and contact his inventor. He doesn't want to be contacted. And I know of somebody in South America who allegedly has been powering a house for 3.5 years using a variation of that technology. I have not been in to see it yet. I was hoping to see it one of these days, but that's probably not going to happen because he sees me as a blabbermouth, and he doesn't want this going out there. He wants to take this in a very measured, gradual way when he's good and ready, when he's got the money, and he's making some really good money right now. So that one, in my opinion, the jury's out. This thing in Turkey that he's talking about that has been around and people have tried to go in and see it. No one's been able to get a really good test. To a certain extent, that's true. He has given some tests, but they have not been long enough for the academic community to sign off on it. And he wants to be vindicated once and for all. So in Europe, there is going to be in a university. This is they presently are in communication with the university. The university is preparing a room specifically for this that will be insulated from all external electromagnetic interference, so that they can prove that this thing is functioning on its own, not through any inductive mechanism. And they're going to run this motor for 30 days. I have been in communication with several people with this company, and I am satisfied that they are fully intending to be vindicated. Now, if they are running a scam and they're just based on the hope of a vindication, they're getting in money, I put a note in my news to the effect that if you want to put money into this company, make sure that it is in escrow so that it is contingent on the successful validation of the technology, then they get the money. And they were fine with that wording. They didn't have any problem with that wording, and I find them to be very forthright and honest. They had a guy that I was working with.
Did you confirm it with the university, Sterling?
Well, in fact, we want to come back to that right after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen are my guests having a debate over free energy. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder, incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly, leak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people to keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Playboy scum on top.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And now, my very special guests today, Mark Dancy and Sterling D. Allen from Pierce Wiki. Now, we're having a wee bit of a debate upon this topic of free energy. Now, two things we want to address coming back from the break from last one. Firstly, Mark has a question to Sterling regarding the university where he says that tests are going on with this piece of technology. And then after he's asked and answered that question, I have a question about patents and what the parameters are from them. Right, so, Mark, go ahead, ask your question.
Oh, I got just two questions, and you can take your time, Sterling. One is, which university is doing this? It's all being kept secret in cloak and dagger. That's not normally the way universities work. And my second question is, in all the years you've been creating free running energy devices, how many do you use in your everyday life of powering your house and car, or are you paying for electricity and buying gasoline just like the rest of us? They're my two questions.
Sure. First question is, how do I know the name of the university in Europe? No, I don't. They say that, and why would the university want to keep that confidential? Because we're dealing with an industry that has been poo-pooing the idea of a magnet motor for basically forever. And anyone who steps out and says that these things are real is basically committing academic suicide. And they don't want to do that until they have enough evidence that this thing, you know, is not going to go bad. And so they basically are holding the cards tight to their chest until something, you know, smells good. And then, you know, when the results come out that it doesn't work as claimed, I would imagine at that point, once they've got all the information and they can write a full report and they can put their name behind the report for good or for bad, then they go public with it. That's my understanding,
Sterling,
of how this goes.
Sterling, could I add on to that? Have you known or documented any cases where university research programs have perhaps been shut down, shut up, or sabotaged, or something of that nature, when testing or corroborating devices
kind
of this nature?
Yeah, Yeah, that happens all the time. And
could you just name a couple of quick examples?
On the Smart Scarecrow show this last Monday night, there was a guy on with Gary Hendershot talking about a situation he had where he was at a university doing some interesting research, and they basically, you know, there may be more to the story than what he's saying, but from his vantage point, he felt like they kicked him off campus. They at first were supporting him. They were allowing him to use the lab facilities. He was getting some really interesting results, and he basically found himself ostracized and kicked out off the campus because of the controversial nature of those results.
That's it was actually because of occupational health and safety he got kicked off. He wasn't complying.
Yeah, and that's the claim that they used. That was the argument that they used. That was a ruse to cover. And they always have some kind of good excuse.
What kind of, if it was occupational health and safety, what were the dangers? What were the concerns that they raised? And was there any evidence for those claims?
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I'd have to update myself. I wasn't listening Monday, but I remember the case. There were a lot of concerns. There was concerns he wasn't a faculty member or member of staff, that they didn't have insurance to cover that situation. The procedures he was using were considered dangerous by some. He'd breached a few, not deliberately, but he'd breached a few rules as far as methodologies and safety. Having worked at a university myself for years, I could actually see those concerns. You've got a what they call a duty of due care, not only for protection of people from themselves, but protection of the staff and students, and especially when you're in a public facility. And they did offer him some courtesies as far as using some equipment in the lab, but there was no way it was related to the technology. And the claims of the technology, I mean, what he's claiming, there wasn't much there, really. It's nothing there. And if there was, he could have continued with it in a private lab or with private funding or with other people assisting him, and it never came to anything. And quite often you get these stories of this oppression or, you know, I work with some great institutions. I work with a great team of PhD scientists here, engineers and that, and we never see any signs of any form of, I'm not saying it didn't happen in the past, but at the moment, governments, industry, individuals, everybody, they want solutions. They want the energy crisis solved. They want pollution and the environment improved. They're actually very, very supportive to it. But more importantly, they want the truth. And every time I've seen examples of claimed suppression or MIBs or interference, it's normally when they have to put up or shut up. And it's, you know, the day before, oh, I was visited and threatened. Okay. I'm not saying it's never happened, but in a lot of cases, you really do have to look at both sides of the story.
Now, in the conspiracy world, this is also the case. Many people will claim that their shows are hacked by the NSA or whatever, when it's actually the host or the network's own incompetence that's to blame. running through the absolute documented facts, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, in order to produce a conclusive result in terms of proving suppression, I believe is actually a very important part of this. Now, that said, as Mark did illustrate, suppression does happen and has happened. This happened to Nikola Tesla, didn't it? This happened to, I think, Cameron Pogue. He created the Pogue carburetor, allegedly got 200 miles per gallon using vaporizing fuel instead of direct fuel injection as we have today. I've seen a number of examples, but again, I'm not a intense researcher, so I can't prove 100% exactly what the entire apparatus and what all the evidence involved in these alleged suppressions actually is. I just don't know. But we do have an admission on all sides here from Mark, myself, and from Sterling that suppression can and does happen. Individual case-by-case basis and evidential analysis, on the other hand, is the key to these.
Right. I would like to just make a couple of points in response to what Mark said. I think he makes some very reasonable points about how things are done in the university and why they would expel this person from the campus.
I agree.
Those are good, some good arguments that he made. And to a certain extent, I would relent that in this case, it was not a case of quote-unquote suppression. It was a case of a impedance mismatch, a guy who was trying to do cutting-edge technology research, and the university didn't appreciate the way he was doing it for good reasons. My comeback from a vantage point of suppression on a larger scale is that the academic environment is extremely slow-moving. This not-invented-here syndrome is so difficult to work through that that's why a lot of the best inventions through time have come from garage inventors. For example, a really excellent technology, the jet turbine, was not invented by Boeing. It wasn't invented by some jet manufacturer. It was invented in a garage, and the guy just about, he was broke, and finally somebody came and gave him some money, gave him a chance. He said, if you can get this thing to run for 20 minutes, we'll help you out. And he crossed his finger, and luckily his prototype was able to last 20 minutes, and the rest is history. This was a garage technology. And so historically what has happened, there's a principle that new wine cannot be put into old bottles. Academia represents old bottles. New wine represents the new breakthrough ideas. And that's why I am on the lookout outside the box, because historically it's been that way. And even though, yes, we run across a lot of bogus things, a lot of scams, a lot of people who are well-meaning but just don't have what they claim to have, like Mark says very well, that does happen. The reason I keep looking and the reason I keep hoping and the reason that I believe first is because historically that has been where the winners come from. And I want to help the winner be a winner by identifying and supporting him rather than suppressing him.
Sterling, if we could also address Mark's second point, do you currently use anything of a free energy device type nature to power your home?
If I did,
the world
would know about it, and everyone would have one. We're not there yet, and it's to my chagrin that I thought 11 years ago when I first started into this that we were a few months away from having these things available in the marketplace, and it always seems like they're really close. But there's a lot of factors as to why we don't have those, and I don't know that we necessarily need to go into these now because I want to give Mark time to talk and whatnot. But no, I don't have anything in my house that's powered by quote-unquote exotic free energy technology.
Okay.
But I am very hopeful that we will very soon. There's some very promising technologies that Mark would agree are promising. Cold fusion, for example, is making some great strides, which is not recognized by mainstream academia yet.
Now, Sterling, I wanted to jump and offer a question to both of you, and it's about patenting. What are the requirements for actually obtaining a patent? Does your device have to work, or is it simply an intellectual concept, an idea that you're patenting so nobody else can copy or replicate that specific idea or form of technology? And if so, does that mean that the patent then is owned by the patent office and other people can't use it? I mean, what's the parameters here? I'd like to address that to Mark first, if that's possible.
Well, it's how you word a patent. If you say, I've got something that creates free energy as perpetual motion, you'd probably have to get up and prove it to them. You know, they're not silly people. However, when it comes to devices such as we mentioned, hydrogen devices and magnetic motors, they're normally worded in such a way that, yes, and the water is converted to hydrogen and then inputted into an engine. People that where claims patents have been awarded, that later on they say, oh, look, I've got a patent, it's a free energy device. It's not normally worded in a way that they're claiming free energy. They're just claiming part of the process. The second part of it is, depending where the patent, the law's changed quite a bit over the years, but normally you don't have to produce a working gizmo in front of them unless you're making a very exotic claim. If you're making a very exotic claim, then you would actually have to produce I suggest, more evidence, scientific evidence or something to support your claim. So it's a little bit tricky, and it's all to do with the devil's in the detail and how you word these things. But there are a lot of patents. Like there's one recently claimed on a PAP engine or noble gas engine. The guy's been claiming, I've got a patent for 2 or 3 years. A lot of people who claim patents have a patent application in pending. That doesn't mean the patent's granted. And it could be 2, 3, 4 years sometimes, people saying, I've got a patent, but it turns out they've got a claim in, and then in the end it gets rejected or they have to go back and rewrite it. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but just because a patent exists doesn't mean that what is claimed in the patent actually can happen and it is an academic exercise.
Okay. Well, that's actually kind of the response that I wanted. You know, just because somebody has a patent doesn't mean that it's guaranteed that whatever the patent is for, in fact, actually works. And again, referring back to what I mentioned earlier about individual case-by-case basis, proving this, that, and the other, it's all very well for people to make claims, but you need to have the evidence to back up said claims. So, Sterling, do you have a response or perhaps a differing opinion?
Yeah, first I would say that I would pretty much agree that my understanding of the patent process is as Mark described it. The only thing I would add to that is that historically the patent office has been, I would argue, parasitical or antagonistic against certain technologies that are actually legitimate and have working devices behind them. For example, cold fusion technologies, if it even mentions the word cold fusion or anything, any derivative thereof, they actually have a policy, and this has been exposed and documented. They had a policy to not award a patent just because of that, and that, in my opinion, is criminal, and is totally contrary to the purpose of the patent office. It's totally political, has nothing to do with science, and that has gone on. I think that's been reformed to a certain extent, but it has been a problem in the past.
Now, I also heard claims that the U.S. Patent Office was indeed taking U.S. patents from the patent holders and selling them to China out from underneath them. And I haven't researched into whether or not that claim is 100% correct. And I'd like either of you to address that when we come back about whether or not there is any foreseen or potential corruption within the patent office itself and their methodologies of approval or disapproval of patent applications. Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen from the Free Energy Wikipedia are my guests. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the final segment here of the first hour. My very special guests, Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen, having a debate over free energy devices and the patent office, which is what I wanted to address in this last segment here that we have. And we've got the two guys over for the next hour, and I was thinking we might want to take some callers. But so, is the patent office, and I want some real examples here. Has the patent office ever colluded with big oil or any type of things in order to suppress, sell out, or otherwise impede the creation of new technologies? And it doesn't have to be a free energy device. It could be anything. Any examples you can think of, gentlemen?
The mark first.
Well, I'm not sure about a lot of the things you said. In America, for instance, and they have done this in the past, and it wasn't to suppress, but they have got the ability that if there's a new patent application in, that if it's in the interest of national security, like it may be a process or a key component that somebody could use to build a bomb, in the interest of national defence, they can actually, suppress the technology. Now, to what extent they've abused that over the years, I don't know. I wouldn't have a clue.
But do you believe that there's a possibility that they have abused it?
Well, anything's possible. But the examples I know of actually did have genuine, concerns they did have about, yes, this could be a bit of a threat if this got out there in the wrong hands. But you really don't know. It's behind closed doors, a lot of this stuff. It's it has happened. To what extent, I don't know. As far as selling the secrets out to China, I can't quite figure that one out. But anything's possible. I mean, I watch movies here and you think, oh, wow, did that really happen? But they have got the ability to do that in the interest of national defence. It has happened. To what extent, I haven't got a clue.
Mm-hmm. Sterling?
Yeah, I was just disrupted because I'm here in Brazil and somebody just rang the door to the gate and I'm not sure what to do here because I'm on the radio and somebody wants to come in.
If you want to run down and quickly answer the gate, just put the phone down.
Okay.
And when you come back, just let us know that you're back so we can address the question to you. You know the question we're asking too about whether or not there is the possibility for suppression under national security for the Patents Office. Now, that's in terms of the United States. Now, I define the word security to mean tyranny, essentially. So, the old saying, the founding fathers, those who sacrifice their liberty for security wind up losing both and deserve neither. So when something's classified under national security, it seems to me that they're classifying it so that they can keep the national tyranny going. But that's just a broad brush stroke.
That's a fair enough comment. I mean, it's a fair enough comment. I mean, the media, my observations of the media here compared to the freedoms we have in Australia and New Zealand, it's chalk and cheese. It's great. One thing I wanted to touch on a bit later is why everybody's looking for the, and Sterling does a great job, by the way. Everybody, I even threw some bucks his way recently to help him keep going, is he does a great job hunting out all of these exotic and weird and wonderful technologies. I guess where we disagree is in the conclusion, is it real or not? And that's where we go hammer and tong, as you can see, that we disagree, is that he might declare it's real. I say, show me the data. When the data's in, then start claiming it's real. And the reason I'm like that is sometimes some of these unscrupulous people, the snake oil salesmen, come into this field of free energy because they find easy targets, poor people who should know better go and invest in something because they want to be part of the next big thing. So that's where we disagree. I'm more of show me the data, but by all means report on it, report the claims, but just make sure before you proclaim it's real, go and check out and put the other side of the story. So that's our fundamental difference. Otherwise, we're both on the same quest.
Okay, Sterling, you're back, are you?
Yeah. Is somebody bringing me my breakfast for tomorrow?
Oh, you've got to love that breakfast. Okay, would you be able to elaborate onto your concerns maybe about the Patent Office? And I made the point just while you were away that I define the word security to mean tyranny. So when the old saying, those who have the want to sacrifice their liberty for security, lose both and deserve neither.
Yeah.
So when something's classified under national security, it's simply to ensure that the nation has tyranny?
I would tend to agree that in many cases that is the operative principle, that it's tyranny that's being protected, not national security of the United States as it used to protect freedom. But I would also agree with Mark that there are certainly some cases where there is a genuine national security prerogative that they have. But the instances that I know of don't fit into that classification. And if you were to ask me to list some examples, We do have a page on our website. We used to own the domain name. I think we still do, energysuppression.com/PezWiki page, where we've got, you know, some 30, 40 different cases that are some of the instances that have happened or alleged to have happened over time, including some patent issues that we're talking about. And there's links to the patent, national security documentation, and all that kind of stuff. So you can get more information there.
Okay, seems in some cases irrational insecurity rather than national security. Now, Mark said earlier, he used a term which is synonymous with fraud. He used the term snake oil. And you know who that reminds me of? Big Bill Rockefeller. He's the Primarch of the... No kidding. He was the Primarch of the Rockefeller family. He's the person who actually amassed their fortune. And you can look up his history. He literally was a traveling snake oil salesman.
Yeah.
Except, with one exception... He didn't just go into individual towns by himself, scam the town, and move off with all their money. He actually hired a legion of con men to con huge amounts of areas at a time and move on. This is how he amassed so much wealth. Then he decided that in order to secure said wealth, he would put it into oil. And in order to, I think it was under U.S. Standard Oil, it might have been after his time, his forebears carried on, they had this this process called sweating, where they would lower their prices artificially through Rockefeller Standard Oil in order to beat out the competition and destroy them. It was kind of like, you're either going to sell us your business now and we're going to have a monopoly, or we're going to artificially lower our prices below yours so that you're going to lose all your money and then we'll buy you out anyway, right?
And I wonder, at that time was electric vehicles. A lot of the cars back then were electric.
Hmm. Indeed, I heard that they were much more popular than the other cars, which were smoky and loud and kind of scary.
Actually, what you're talking about there, actually, they apply in the retail industry in some countries and so-called free capitalist world, where a massive retailer will give somebody a huge contract buying their product. And it's subject to being paid after it's sold, and they'll put it in a warehouse for 2 years. And so this poor company's got no income, so they say, oh, we'll buy out now, you're in trouble. It's because they're holding all their stock, bought all their stock and not selling it. So they've got no income. There's all sorts of tricks. So back when Rockefeller did it, he was doing it then, but nothing's changed today. Big companies, big capitalists, they all do similar things today.
Would it say that they were some of the progenitors of this type of methodology of suppression and that kind of thing? Or has this been going on since the beginning of business?
Well, here's an interesting twist that I'd like to throw in the mix here, that one of the ways that they're suppressing technology is by having inventors come up with decoy technologies that are bogus or fraudulent to play the field and to waste our time.
What evidence have you got of that?
Just conjecture. Just a guess.
Conjecture.
Just throwing it out as a possibility to consider.
Sorry, go ahead, Mark. In fact, we've only got about maybe 30 seconds if you want to finish a point before
One thing I do want to say, I'm very, like I said, Sterling does a great job. I enjoy what he does. But there is a lot of good technologies now that do exist, and it's not the silver bullet, it's not free energy, but clever application of good technologies is making a difference and will in the future. So I'm very optimistic that we can bring about good change.
All right. So I want to also make a point here as well that people sometimes spend their entire lives working on something that they believe to be true but don't know until they've spent most of their life working on it. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Yeah. And I don't know about you guys, but I plan to spend the vast majority of my life, or however long it takes, to try and understand as much about the world and all of its various nooks and crannies of research and development and exposure of scumbaggery as I can, because I don't know. It's not necessarily that I personally need some kind of gratification for all the truth to come out. It's just personally I want to find out what really is true, just for my own peace of mind. We'll be right back. Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen from PestWiki.com are my guests.
Alert the masses.